Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson, and this is On Point. One of the biggest and probably most popular campaign promises this president made was that he would find the money, devote the resources to rebuilding this nation's crumbling infrastructure, put Americans to work, bringing our roads, tunnels, bridges, airports, railways, you name it, into the 21st century. Yesterday, he presented his plan. This hour On Point, can the president make America modern again? You can join us on air or online. Is your state, city, town in desperate need of new roads and bridges? Are you willing to pony up more taxes to pay for it? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook. We're there at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Washington is Lauren Gardner. She covers transportation and infrastructure for Politico Pro. Lauren, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Jane.
President Trump has sent Congress a $4.4 trillion budget. We are digging into the infrastructure piece of it this hour. And here he is, President Trump, at his first State of the Union address last month, promising he would rebuild the nation's crumbling infrastructure.
Tonight, I'm calling on Congress to produce a bill that generates at least $1.5 trillion for the new infrastructure investment that our country so desperately needs. Every federal dollar should be leveraged by partnering with state and local governments and, where appropriate, tapping into private sector investment to permanently fix the infrastructure deficit. And we can do it.
Lauren Gardner, there's the president. Give us the headline of his proposal here.
So the president's proposal includes $200 billion in direct federal money, and that would be split up into four different pots of funding. The outlines of this we've generally known for a couple of months now, but there was a little bit more meat on the bones yesterday in the proposal. But specifically, half of that money, so $100 billion, would go towards an incentives program, which would essentially be grants to state and local governments who apply, who meet specific requirements in terms of, you know, we're able to bring X percentage of our own money, whether it be through taxes we've levied or tolls we've set, to the table, and then the feds turn around and say, okay, that's great. Here's a little bit of a extra layer of money on top to reward you for coming to the table with a lot of your own money. And then the rest of the money, a quarter of it would go specifically to rural states in the form of block grants, and then the rest of it would be split up into existing financing programs for transportation projects that exist already in the federal government, and also a pot of money for transformative projects, which hasn't been very specifically defined yet, but there's been examples cited like possibly the Hyperloop, Elon Musk's idea to move people and things through high-speed tubes, projects like that.
I see. So as far as the cost, I'm just curious about this $200 billion. It's $200 billion in federal funding. And what I'm hearing you say is mostly through incentives, the administration leverages that $200 billion into a $1.5 trillion spending plan. Is that right?
Yes, they're saying that they believe that that $200 billion can spur up to at least $1.5 trillion in total spending when you account for the money that states, local governments, even the private sector through public-private partnerships and other financing opportunities would bring to the table on this. And you've been hearing a lot of talk about that on Capitol Hill, especially among Democrats who say, you know, when you look at it, we just see $200 billion because that's traditionally how we look at funding these kinds of programs in Washington. The $200 billion is the direct federal component of this. So they're saying that the $1.5 trillion figure is kind of is pie in the sky.
So what are states saying?
The White House has said that they've gotten a great positive reaction from a lot of states and local governments. They've been doing a lot of outreach over the last year with those lower levels of government to see, to kind of test the waters to see if they would be amenable to the types of programs that they're proposing. And then you have others, especially members of Congress who worked in state government before or who were governors in the past, who say, this isn't realistic. States and local governments are already cash-strapped.
And so Democrats also say that that this plan would cut more in federal infrastructure spending than the proposal would add. Is that true?
So they're looking at the totality of the budget that was released yesterday. And the White House did propose leveling some pretty steep cuts to existing transportation programs, especially there's an existing grant program for transit projects that they're proposing to phase out. And they also are proposing to completely eliminate a popular program called Tiger that has been used to fund a lot of transportation projects around the country. The administration is saying, no, I mean, yes, we are proposing these cuts, but we're proposing to kind of redirect infrastructure spending in ways that we think will get us more bang for our buck.
I see. And so beyond the projects, Lauren Gardner, much of the proposal focuses on reforming the permitting process, right, with a one agency, one decision framework for environmental reviews on infrastructure projects. Tell us about that.
Environmental permitting has long been a bugaboo of sorts among infrastructure proponents. They say the process can take way too long. It can take several years. It involves myriad agencies in some cases. So there's been a lot of talk about trying to further whittle down and streamline that process so that it can go a lot quicker. And then you have some in Congress who say, wait a minute, we've done that in the last couple transportation laws that we've passed, specifically in 2012 and then again in 2015. Congress did include some provisions in those laws that try to get at some of the goals that the White House has included in the plan this time around. But yes, one of their big things is to try and leave everything to one specific agency, depending on what sort of project is in play.
This was a big piece of President Trump's campaign. There was a real bipartisan consensus. There has been over the years, at least, for our nation's infrastructure, which is in deep decay, to sort of come together on this. A lot of Americans remember the shovel-ready projects, remember a decade ago, which didn't go very far. Tell us, have there been other successful infrastructure bills in recent memory?
Well, the last major transportation law that was passed was in 2015. That was the last highway bill. That was about $305 billion over about 5 years for surface transportation projects in the country. And that was the last major one. And that's kind of been the outstanding question is, okay, well, we did a highway bill not that long ago. Is there going to be the appetite to do something slightly different but also try to address some of the unanswered questions left over from that debate in an election year before that bill technically runs out. And one of those unanswered questions is how do you deal with the lower purchasing power of the Highway Trust Fund? And that's not something that this infrastructure proposal that the White House released yesterday addresses.
It does not include it, right.
Mm-hmm.
Here's some sound yesterday from the White House in a meeting with governors about this infrastructure proposal. President Trump told state officials to prioritize getting the paperwork done so that building can begin.
When we give you as governors and mayors and people representing your great states, so we give you money and you can't get your approvals, I guess we're going to have to take that money back or you're not going to build. And some of you are sitting around the table that I know, some of the governors, you're going to get those permits, I have no doubt. Others, I see a couple sitting around the table. I don't think they're going to get their permits so fast.
So he's talking to the governors there. What happens on Capitol Hill? What's next in Washington? Are lawmakers going to turn this into a bill now, Lauren?
That's the million-dollar question. So one of the common phrases you hear on Capitol Hill is, you know, the White House proposes, the Congress disposes. The likelihood that Congress will take up all of the principles that the White House released yesterday wholesale is pretty slim. But there is a lot of excitement, especially among Republicans who are very transportation-focused, to at least take some of this and, and build on it in on Capitol Hill. So you can expect to see some of the major transportation-focused committees start holding hearings, start putting together the outlines of some legislation. The big question will be, can they, do they have the juice to get this going during an election year?
Lauren Gardner covers transportation and infrastructure for Politico Pro. She joins me from Washington. Lauren, thanks so much for the information. We appreciate it.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Joining me now from Washington is Dean Franks. He's Senior Vice President for Congressional Relations at the American Road and Transportation Builders Association. Dean Franks, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me, Jane.
So the White House says this infrastructure proposal is an opening bid. What's your reaction to it?
I think that's exactly right. I think what is almost more important than what was in the president's proposal is that he finally put out a proposal. And the shift, as Lauren mentioned, now goes to Congress. You know, the president's plan is fine. There's some positive aspects. There's some things that we would have liked to have seen and some things that could have been done better. But, you know, it's now on Congress. I'm kind of stating the obvious, but Congress was always going to be the one that was going to write this bill and hopefully make some tough decisions. So the focus goes there.
So the president's proposals would require local governments, as we just heard, to come up with a hefty chunk of change to pay for some of these projects. And the big question for a lot of them is, well, can we afford this? And I'm curious, what's the answer to your mind?
That is, I think it depends on each specific area. You know, some states have better have in the past been able to access and leverage some of these public-private partnerships that are being proposed as a main component of this. But other states haven't, and that's why I think you saw a $50 billion or one-fourth of the proposal is going towards rural states that aren't going to be able to use some of these leveraging tools and haven't been able to in the past. But, you know, again, it depends on where you're at and if there is interest from the private sector, if options like tolling are viable in your area, you know, maybe that is something that can be done.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS ConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
You've probably heard about this Russia investigation by Special Counsel Robert Mueller. Every day there's a new headline about it. Well, Embedded is back with two episodes that lay the whole thing out, start to finish, so the news makes sense. Listen on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're looking at the White House new infrastructure plan this hour. It was to be one of this administration's top priorities, and it was finally rolled out yesterday. Listeners, you can join the conversation. Has infrastructure failed where you live? What happened? Can lawmakers come together to fix potholes, broken bridges, and train tracks? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Over 50,000 bridges across this country are crumbling and sometimes collapsing. Just one of them is the Arlington Memorial Bridge in the nation's capital. Here is CNN reporter Renee Marsh reporting 2 years ago on the bridge's terrible condition. Beneath the bustling roadway, the steel girders are hollowed out by rust. The rebar is popping through the concrete.
68,000 vehicles cross the Arlington Memorial Bridge between D.C. and Virginia every day. This is what drivers don't see.
It's just eroding and the concrete is falling off.
The original support beams from 1932 have never been replaced. Federal government spending on infrastructure has declined 9% from 2003 to 2014.
Just one example there in Arlington, the Arlington Memorial Bridge. My guest this hour, Dean Franks, Senior Vice President for Congressional Relations at the American Road and Transportation Builders Association. His organization is, with some caveats, somewhat upbeat about the president's proposals. But I'd like to bring a voice now into the conversation, a more critical voice. Joining me from Philadelphia is Ed Rendell. From 1992 until 2011, he served as Democratic mayor of Philadelphia and then as governor of Pennsylvania. Governor Rendell, welcome to One Point. How nice to have you.
Well, Janet, I also serve currently as the co-chair of Building America's Future, probably one of the leading infrastructure advocacy groups in the country.
Excellent.
Plan is a joke.
How so, Governor? Why is it?
Because the president promised he was going to do big and bold things. This $200 billion is spread out over 10 years, so it's $20 billion a year. To give you an example of how little money that is, 1,000 real estate developers got a $341 billion tax cut over the next 10 years, almost twice as much as 330 million Americans are getting from the federal government to help our infrastructure. The bill is a joke. It doesn't raise any new revenue. It's taking this supposed $20 billion a year from existing programs, so it'll come from domestic programs. It changes the ratio between states and federal government. It's always traditionally been the states put up 20%, the federal government puts up 80%. That ratio has been flipped around. The states have to put up 80%. Mm-hmm. In terms of new money, 25 states have already raised their gas tax in the last 4 years, so they're not going to generate any new money that goes towards the $1.5 trillion because they've already bit the bullet and done that, so it won't be new dollars. It's an absolute farce for those transformative projects. That's 10%. That's $2 billion a year. To give you an example, just the tunnel across the Hudson River into New York would take all $2 billion for 4 or 5 years for that one transformative project. Mm-hmm. You talk about Hyperloop, to build a high-speed railroad from Washington to Boston would cost about $110 billion. And in the entire 10-year package, there's only $20 billion for transformative projects.
So, Dean Franks, jump in here. You hear Governor Rendell giving a pretty strong assessment of this. What do you say?
Sure. I mean, in some ways, Governor Rendell's exactly right. We need to be doing a lot more investment in the country. The American Society of Civil Engineers says we need to be investing over $2 trillion over the next 10 years. And so we do need to be doing more. However, I think there should be some credit given to the administration on finally talking about doing something additive. We, for a long time here in D.C., have been only focused on maintaining current conditions and doing the minimum. And folks like Governor Rendell and others have been champions of talking about additive things. I think the president should get some credit for that. And as I mentioned before, less focus on what's in the proposal and more focus that the proposal is finally out. And we can now work with Congress to get something done and hopefully better than what's in this proposal.
So, Governor Rendell, the president says this is just an opening bid. I'm curious, what percentage of any infrastructure plan should be paid for by the federal government? What's the sweet spot to your mind? What's the balance here? Because states in this plan seem to be paying a lot more than the federal government.
Let me correct something Dean said, and he's trying to be nice, and I understand that. But he says this is additive. Well, yeah, we're adding $20 billion a year, but we're doing nothing to repair the Highway Trust Fund, which is losing billions of dollars a year because the gas tax hasn't been raised since 1993, and so it's producing less money than we need under the Highway Trust Fund. So it's not additive. It's a joke. It's less than 60%. It's 60% of the tax break for 1,000 real estate developers. It's not really additive, and it misses the bar.
So what do you want to see, Governor? How much do you want the federal government to pitch in here?
The federal government should go back to the 80-20 ratio, with the exception of cases where we can get private dollars. But take those 500 bridges that you just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Those 500 bridges, Building America's Future did a study, and about 100 of them have enough traffic to support tolls, toll increases or new tolls. So let's assume we get the private sector. And by the way, the private sector doesn't do things for free. They want a rate of return, which has to come from tolls or taxes. So let's assume we toll those 100 bridges. That leaves 49,900 bridges that can't be tolled, that desperately need repair, that are danger to public safety, that are making us less competitive. and the federal government wants to do it with 20% state federal and 80% mm-hmm. state and local, change in a ratio that we've had for decades. Mm-hmm. It's not simply enough. And this is the president who bragged that he was going to build, he was going to do big and bold things, transformative project of $2 billion a year. Tell that to Hyperloop. Hyperloop would cost 50 times that much.
So, Dean Franks, I got to jump in here, Governor. Dean, the governor mentioned the gas tax. Supporters say it hasn't been raised in a long time, since 1993. Good idea to raise it, to raise some more money here for these projects?
Absolutely. We wholeheartedly support raising the gas tax. It's something that should have been done a long time ago and indexed to inflation. However, I do think that, you know, we were disheartened not to see something on the Highway Trust Fund in the president's proposal. If he had come out and proposed, let's say, you know, a 50-cent gas tax increase like he's supposedly been talking about behind the scenes, that would have, you know, political shenanigans would have ensued, and the you know, politics of the issue would have taken over, where, and that's on both sides, both Democrats and Republicans would have been forced to come out. Where are you on a gas tax? And most of them, most that are running for re-election probably would have said, been forced to say they oppose it. And so I think it was probably, in hindsight, smart of the president not to come out and put something like that on the table. But be in a position to support whatever Congress puts forward. If Congress puts forward something on the Highway Trust Fund, a user fee, whether it's a gas tax or something else, I think the president, from all indications from the administration folks that I've spoken with, will be there to be supportive of whatever comes out of the Congress.
Dean Franks, Governor Rendell, I've got a board full of calls here. Let me get a few in.
Can I say one thing about
all right,
the gas
one
tax?
Thing, Governor. Yep.
The executive, whether it's a state or a country, has to lead. And if you want a gas tax, and everyone basically quietly agrees we need to raise the gas tax, as you said, Jane, it hasn't been raised since 1993, mm-hmm. The president has to take the leadership. He has to take it and put it on its back. And as far as legislators not wanting to do it politically, in Pennsylvania, my successor, Tom Corbett, a good Republican, with my aid, I helped him lobby for this, passed a 32-cent increase in the gas tax over 5 years. Republicans voted for it, some of them, and Democrats voted for some of them. The next election, not one person who voted for the gas tax increase lost. In New Jersey, they raised the gas tax 13 cents last year. In the election in November, not one person who voted for the tax increase lost. Mm.
That's and the governor is exactly right, and that's the case all around the country. South Carolina, you know, Trump country down there.
The reddest of the red.
They did a veto, override a veto of the governor and passed a gas tax. So it can happen. The political will just up on Capitol Hill is just lacking.
Let me get Dolores in here from Waterford, Pennsylvania. Dolores, you're on the line. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. Hi. Hi, Governor Rendell.
Hi, Dolores.
Anyway, I'm from Northwest Pennsylvania, right up here by Erie. Pennsylvania ranks like number 2, and as far as bridges go, in desperate need of repair. And it was in his last year, I believe, in office that Governor Corbett raised the legislation raised vehicle license and registration fees, as well as the gas tax. I don't know where everybody thinks these local governments are going to get all this money, because up here, in this region, we are pretty destitute. There's not a lot of extra money for a lot of these infrastructure projects.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, let's have more military parades, and let's give more tax breaks to the wealthy. Because I was in the military, and I lived in Germany for 12 years. You'd never see anything as far as bridges and roads like you do here.
Dolores, thank you very much for the call. Let's get Wes in here from Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Wes. You're on the line. Welcome.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I could not agree with the governor more. And one thing I'd like to point out is it's a lot easier to tell someone else to raise their taxes than to lead and actually call for a tax increase yourself. We just recently in Tennessee raised our gas tax 6 cents. And that was a tough, tough sell in a deep, deep red state. And so it was to address an $11 billion backlog of projects just in Tennessee. So any kind of, and I can tell you the appetite for any kind of tax increase whether it be gas tax or anything, is going to be very low on our local level. My question is, this would make so much sense to peg the gas tax to inflation. We need to do that. Otherwise, it's a problem to always have to, quote unquote, raise taxes.
Wes, thank you. Dean Franks, what do you think about that? Peg the gas tax to inflation.
I think that's a great idea. That's something we've been pushing here in D.C. for a long time. You know, to both callers, I would just say, and to all your listeners, call your congressman, call your congresswoman, call your senators. Go to they're going to be on recess next week. Go to a public event and tell them we need this infrastructure package. We need you to step up and show some political courage and raise some revenues for the Highway Trust Fund and for infrastructure broadly. This isn't going to happen unless they hear from constituents.
I want to hear from both of you, Governor Ed Rendell and Dean Franks, how you both describe the state of our national infrastructure. How do you see it out there? What are our greatest vulnerabilities? Governor Rendell, you first.
Well, first of all, we don't have to give a grade. Dean and I, the American Society of Civil Engineers, graded the American infrastructure last year at D+. The $200 trillion that they say need to be spent over the next 10 years will only get us to a C+, B-. We used to have the best infrastructure in the world graded by the World Economic Forum. We're now 10th in the world behind some countries that would make you shake your head. Look, the callers to our Pennsylvania caller, the good news is that gas tax increase allowed the Wolf administration to repair more bridges last year in Pennsylvania than any state in the union. And that's number one. And number two, the Tennessean talked about a bill for inflation. Well, there's a bill in the Congress last session, Corker Murphy, Senator Corker from Tennessee, mm-hmm. which would raise the gas tax 10 cents a gallon and adjust it to inflation. And by the way, let me demonstrate to you how easy it is to raise the federal gas tax. Jane, you're obviously bright and involved in public affairs. What's the federal gas tax per gallon?
Is it 19 cents, I think?
No, it's 18.3 cents. And when I ask that—
Pretty close.
When I ask that where I speak, one out of 100 people know what the federal gas tax is.
Okay.
It is the easy tax to raise because when you get to the pump, it doesn't say $2.98, 42 cents federal tax.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't say that. It's an easy vote. Mm-hmm. These congressmen and senators who hide behind, it's a tough vote. Show some leadership, show a little chutzpah, and go out there and do the right thing.
Dean Franks, where are we most vulnerable with our national infrastructure?
I think, you know, Governor Rendell pointed out the letter grade that the engineers have given, but look at what the generals have said. This is a national defense issue. That our failing infrastructure is something that worries them. We can't mobilize if for some reason. Yes, the security issues on transit systems, electrical grid are prone or could be prone to terrorist attacks. And this is also a financial issue and the economic issue as well. We are, by our goods and services, sitting in traffic all day, losing anywhere, you know, depending on the study, somewhere between $100 billion, $200 billion a year in economic output by just lost in traffic. And so, the tax bill that just passed, some say it's good, some say it's bad, whatever. That's not going to move any of these goods that hopefully the economic growth we hopefully get out of the tax bill. Mm. It's not going to move any of the things that we produce faster. It's only going to get more and more congested unless we make these investments.
Let's get Dan in here. I got to get Dan in here, Governor, from Macon, Georgia. Dan, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
In our area, we're looking to do something called a T-SPLOS. Transportation Special Local Option Sales Tax.
Okay.
We want one penny from every dollar spent to try to fix our roads. We're going to do it ourselves. Mm. We have no choice.
Mm-hmm.
We can't rely on the federal government. We're too far behind. We're too far behind the eight ball. So we've got to get started now. And the only way we can do that is get funds going.
Mm-hmm.
So we proposed a 1% increase in sales tax to try to make that work.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to be a little progressive instead of trying to wait.
Mm-hmm.
A different tact.
Different kind of tax, yeah. Dan, thank you. Thanks for that. Let's get one more in here quickly. Alan in Omaha. You're on the air. Welcome to you, Alan. Hi.
Okay, real quick. This is pure hypocrisy. You know, the president did this massive tax bill, which gave massive benefits to the very wealthy. I have an employee that makes $17 an hour, and what she's benefiting from the tax bill is a deduction of additional $10 in pay. That's what she gets each week. You know, the thing is that any taxation for infrastructure, no matter how much it's needed, is going to totally decimate out, you know, what she has gotten from the deduction.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the thing is, I think that corporate America, the big bucks, should pay for this, because they're the ones, for instance, that use the highways with their big trucks, and that's where the cost for the infrastructure is coming from, on the bridges, on the highways.
Yep.
That's where the damage is.
That's where it is. Alan, thank you. Thanks for speaking to that point. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
What does it take to start something from nothing? And what does it take to actually build it? I'm Guy Raz. Every week on How I Built This, I speak with founders behind some of the most inspiring companies in the world. Find it on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We've been talking about the president's new infrastructure proposal this hour. Supporters see some good ideas there, like speeding up permitting and letting states and cities decide what they need most and how best to build it. Critics see Washington passing the buck onto cash-strapped states and municipalities. Listeners, we'd love to have your opinion here. Do you like the administration's call for faster permitting to get shovels in the ground and get our nation's infrastructure shipshape again? Are you worried that moving too fast will impact the environment? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. When Hurricane Sandy slammed the East Coast in 2012, it flooded New York's subway stations, tunnels, and much more. The call went out for major investments to repair the city's aging infrastructure and to get ready for more storms in the area of climate change. 6 years later, the call is still going out. Here was New Jersey Senator Cory Booker last April sounding the alarm.
One more major event like Hurricane Sandy, it could take one of those tunnels out of service. And if one of those tunnels is out of service, that means a hundreds of millions of dollars of economic impact to this region, and it will create a traffic Armageddon like we have never experienced before.
And here's another example. In August 2007, the Interstate 35 West Bridge over the Mississippi River in Minneapolis collapsed. Here's ABC's Martin Bashir with the story that night.
An eight-lane highway that carries over 100,000 cars a day collapsed into the Mississippi River at the height of rush hour. At this point, we know that at least seven people are dead, and that figure may yet increase. At the moment, according to the Coast Guard, dozens of cars and trucks remain in the water completely submerged.
And the death toll there eventually rose to 13, with 145 injured. My guest this hour, as we talk about the president's new infrastructure plan, Dean Franks, Senior Vice President for Congressional Relations at the American Road and Transportation Builders Association, and Ed Rendell, former governor of Pennsylvania, former mayor of Philadelphia, also co-chair of the Building America's Future Educational Fund. That's a bipartisan coalition of former elected officials pushing for modernization of the nation's infrastructure. Let's look now at the environmental component to all this. Joining me now from Washington is Nick Subcheck. He's a reporter with E&E News, a news organization focused on covering energy and the environment. Nick, welcome to the program. Nice to have you.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me on.
So how does this bill change the way infrastructure projects get approved from an environmental perspective?
So Republicans in the Trump administration see streamlining these environmental permits as sort of the crux of this plan. They say that to leverage over $1 trillion of the relatively small federal investment as the president has proposed, you need to cut down on permitting time to give companies incentive to put money into those projects. And one of the big ways that this plan proposes to do that is by making some changes to the National Environmental Policy Act, which is sort of the foundational environmental law in the United States. So the plan would, for example, limit NEPA permitting to 2 years, 21 months to actually determine the environmental impact of an infrastructure project,
mm-hmm.
and 3 months to make a decision on whether to permit the project. And, you know, for context, there is no current statutory limit on these reviews, and they average 4 to 5 years, depending on how you count the outliers. But they can, on occasion, take more than a decade, which is something you've seen the president say a lot, including in the State of the Union.
So the president says that there is a lot of duplicative environmental review going on. I'm curious, does this mean, this new proposal, does it mean we'll see some of those bedrock environmental laws amended? Some of those decade-old laws, the Environmental Policy Act, the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, what will happen to them?
Right. So the White House says that it doesn't want to make any sort of fundamental changes to these laws. However, the plan does propose some changes to how they're enforced. It would, for example, require the White House Council on Environmental Quality to rewrite its NEPA guidance with the goal of streamlining permitting. This hasn't been done since 1978, so it would be a relatively big step in the world of regulations. In terms of the Clean Air Act, there is a current provision in the Clean Air Act that requires EPA to review environmental impact statements from other agencies. This bill or this proposal would strip that ability from EPA, and that's actually an ability that the Obama-era EPA used to block the Keystone XL pipeline. And there's also a provision in the Clean Water Act called Section 401 that allows states to weigh in on projects like water infrastructure projects and natural gas pipelines. And the proposal addresses this provision, although it's a little vague, but the goal is to take away some of the power from states. And states like New York have used that provision to block pipelines, and the Trump administration has criticized them for it.
I see. One of the concerns about our existing infrastructure is that climate change is making some of it more vulnerable to flooding, to storms, to heat. Can you talk about that for a little bit, Nick? Explain how that works.
Sure. So climate change has all sorts of potential implications for infrastructure. Highways and roads that aren't designed for higher temperatures could see damage to stress expansion joints or, deteriorating asphalt. Ports face sea levels that are projected to rise between 1 and 4 feet by 2100. And in fact, the most recent National Climate Assessment released last year by the Trump administration itself says that it is virtually certain that sea level rise will start affecting infrastructure and coastal communities this century. So engineers, for example, warned that it would be foolhardy to build new infrastructure without taking these things into account. And in fact, one of the big criticisms of this new proposal from the Trump administration is that it includes nothing related to climate change or weather resilience. And actually, through that proposal in the Clean Air Act that they want to strip, it would take some power away from EPA to address these sorts of issues.
Nick, let me get a call in here from Stanley in Royal Oak, Michigan. Hi, Stanley. Glad you called. Welcome to the program. Stanley, are you there? I guess we lost him.
Hello?
Stanley, go ahead.
Yes, sorry about that.
That's okay.
My comment is this. The air in this country right now is that getting rid of regulation is absolutely good, and there doesn't seem to be a recognition on the part of many people that these regulations for the environment and the workplace and every other place, they have real consequences. And my one example briefly is that our president took credit for there not being any civil air aviation accidents, but he didn't take credit for the relaxation of coal mining regulations that's led to almost a doubling in the increase in coal miners' deaths in the year that he's been in the White House. So that's my comment. Regulations are there for a reason. Mend them, but don't end them, to borrow an old phrase.
Stanley, thank you very much. Nick, I know you got to run. One more question. I mean, people like Stanley wonder, can we uphold stringent environmental standards and make the process of permitting, the approval process for some of these infrastructure projects, more efficient? Can the two come together?
Well, they certainly have in the past. I think, as Lauren might have mentioned earlier, the last two highway bills in 2012 and 2015 had some compromise provisions on reforming permitting, streamlining. And I think that as a general rule, you wouldn't hear that much pushback on the broad idea of streamlining permitting from Democrats. And even some environmentalists would say it would be okay to rewrite CEQ standards, though they fear the Trump administration would sort of tear them apart. So, but I do think there is room for compromise here, at least in Congress. 2015, sort of a great example of that is that Senator Jim Inhofe, a Republican from Oklahoma, and former Senator Barbara Boxer, a Democrat from California, were chairman and ranking member of the committee, and they are sort of the opposite end of the ideological spectrum, but they were able to strike a compromise on this issue.
Good to see more of that. Nick Subjek is a reporter with E&E News. Nick, we appreciate your time and all the information. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Let's get back to the phones. Gabriel in Boone, North Carolina. You're on the air. Hi, Gabe. Thanks for waiting. Welcome.
Hi there.
Yeah. Hi.
Can you hear me?
You can.
Hey,
yep. Hi.
Great. Thanks for letting me give in a moment. My big concern, I've moved across the country a couple times. I've worked in D.C. on the East Coast and the West Coast, and I love being in Boone. But my big concern, honestly, is with this new approach and putting it back on states, we're going to get a fracturization of all the stuff that makes the economy work. Let's be honest, the interstate system in the 50s is what revolutionized commerce in this country. And we need to do something to bring it into the new century, and that could be rail corridors, you know, all that stuff. But with the state's focus, I mean, my concern is that's going to be shredded, and it's just going to be each state fighting for each penny and kind of just doing what it needs to do to fix within the state borders, and it's going to destroy interstate trade. And that's a really big concern of mine.
Mm. Gabriel, thanks. Dean Franks, do you see that? Do you worry about hand-to-hand combat among states with the proposal that we're seeing?
Absolutely. And it's not just this proposal, but others as well. There's been an effort afoot on the right for something called devolution, which would essentially devolve the federal role that we have traditionally had in this country to the states and to the localities. That is absolutely the wrong approach. We need a strong federal program for all types of infrastructure, and we're working to make sure that happens. Fortunately, there's not much support for that line of thinking in Congress. We've beaten back some attempts in the last decade or so, but this goes back to the Constitution. Abe Lincoln doing the Transcontinental Railroad. We have a long history of federal, a strong federal role in infrastructure.
Governor Rendell, jump back in here. What is ultimately at stake in our country's development when it comes to infrastructure in the long term? And is the U.S. keeping up with development in places like China and elsewhere?
No, we've fallen way behind. The statistic I gave, we went from first place in being adjudicated as having the best infrastructure to 10th in less than a decade. We're falling behind. We're endangering our public safety. We're screwing up our quality of life. We're becoming economically less competitive, and we're missing an opportunity. If the president had invested, like the Society of Civil Engineers said, $200 billion a year, that would have put 4.5 million Americans back to work, people who don't have college degrees but who could be earning $60,000, $70,000, $80,000, $90,000 a year. There's nothing better for the economy, nothing better for American manufacturing than infrastructure. And, Jane, I want to say one thing.
Okay.
The president isn't entirely wrong about the need to speed up environmental and other regulations. There is no excuse for the time limits that it takes. It's amazing when we want to do something quickly, we can. That clip you played about the bridge in Minneapolis and St. Paul that fell down, that bridge was essentially rebuilt in 11 months. Mm. Under normal circumstances, that would have taken 3 to 5 years. Mm. But they did it because it was crucial to the economic life of the Twin Cities. They managed to do it by waiving a lot of the time limits. They did it in 11 months. So, yes, we can streamline environmental regulations without taking away the basic protection that they offer.
We have it in us, Governor. That's what I'm hearing you say. Thank you. Tim in Boston, you're on the air. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks, Jane.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to comment as somebody with a fairly deep expertise in the field, 15 years in privatization infrastructure all over the U.S. And having seen it firsthand, I can tell you the only thing this is going to do is line the pockets of contractors and equipment suppliers and people that will, at the end of the day, only support projects that have a revenue stream. And at the end of the day, the debt of these projects is still going to have to be backed by taxpayer guarantees. I've seen it. I've seen it firsthand. I've seen projects go well, and I've seen projects go bad. And I think this will just increase the stratification of access to infrastructure in terms of who gets access to it, because somebody's going to have to pay for it on a per-use basis.
Tim, thank you very much for the call there from Boston. Let's get Stephen here from Detroit. Hi, Steve. You're on the air. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I am a military veteran, and when I moved to Michigan a few years ago, I used to tell people, man, I've seen better roads in third world countries and combat zones. It's absolutely appalling. And the state released a study last year that attributed $1,200 per motorist in increased maintenance costs to repair the damage done by the roads. And the problem isn't that there's no money available. There's plenty of money in Lansing, but it's held up by partisan bickering in the state legislature. So we, of course, need the federal funds.
You
which,
need those dollars.
Although under
yeah.
Trump are going to be a minority of the funding, which I don't think is going to work.
We're hearing that over and over again this hour. Steve, thank you very much for the call from Detroit there.
Jane, Steve's call was a great call because it pointed out something we always talk about, the cost of doing nothing. If we let our infrastructure decay as it's been decaying, the average motorist, just for transportation, pays about $800 to $1,000 a year in additional costs. A gas tax increase, that federal gas tax and the Corker bill, would cost the average driver who drives 12,000 miles a year about $140.
Dean Franks, so we got about a minute left here. The president will need Democrats to pass a bill in the Senate on any of this, and many have already blasted this plan. Do you see Democrats coming to the table in this sort of bipartisan effort that many have hoped for and talked about for so many years? Democrats coming to the table to cut a deal, potentially giving Trump a win before the midterms? Is that possible?
I sure hope so. We need it. And we can't afford to wait. I think the governor and a lot of callers have demonstrated that. It would be a shame if politics got in the way of this. I think Congress has the opportunity to come to the table with their own plan. And once again, I would urge all listeners, call your congressman, call your congresswoman, and tell them to come to the table in a bipartisan manner and pass an infrastructure package.
Governor Rendell, I'll give you 5 seconds. What's the last word?
I definitely agree with what was said. We can't wait. Democrats, my message to Democrats is we can't wait till the next presidential election, till 2021, to do infrastructure. Let's put our heads together, ignore the president's proposal, put a good federal investment on the table.
Ed Rendell, former governor of Pennsylvania, Dean Franks, senior vice president for congressional relations. Appreciate both of you and your voice, your information this hour. Really great conversation. Coming up tomorrow, we talk about the budget, deep cuts to the social safety net. That's tomorrow. We'll dig in. I'm Jane Clayson for now. This is On Point.